All right. Hello and welcome to our first Senators Extra podcast we've had in a little while here. And joining me today is citizen hockey columnist Wayne Scanlon. And Wayne, we haven't talked in a while, so let's take a big overview of the Senators here. A little surprising, to say the least, that we're talking playoff scenarios at this time of year.
Well, I guess it is if we're thinking, you know, big picture, but I think we've kind of gotten used to the idea around here now that this is a top eight team, and their performance in Florida this week certainly solidified that by beating Tampa and Florida on consecutive nights. And that coming off what was a little bit of a scary homestand when they went 1-2-2, and people were starting to wonder because they'd had so many games in hand, and then having that poor performance in that homestand, whether or not they could hang on to that top eight spot. But you know, now back from Florida with those two wins, and they sit around till Monday, but they have solidified their position a little bit.
It sure is indicative of where they are as a franchise, though, isn't it? I mean, you look at our sort of recent futility in our Senators prediction panel, where you just really don't know which team's going to show up on any given night. I mean, they'll blow out the Panthers, but, you know, just put up nothing against the Leafs.
Right, and then and beat Nashville, you know, and lose to St. Louis. So they're just, it's really tough to read, but, you know, as I look around the league, James, I think we're seeing a lot of that. Like at Tampa, they're losing to Ottawa. They trade Dominic Moore yesterday. I mean, they're looking like a seller at the deadline. They come up with a big performance and beat San Jose last night. So, I mean, from night to night, it's just so hard to get a read on teams. Chicago comes up with a big win the other night after losing so many in a row, and you expect they're going to turn it around. So I think it's going to be a terrific month or so down to the wire, month and a half to see how this winds up, because races are so tight and there's so many teams that are on the bubble and have to decide between now and February 27 if they're buyers or sellers.
And I mean, you look at a team that's coming up on Monday, the Islanders. There's another example of a team that started the year just horribly, and now they've rattled off a bunch of wins and 6 points out of a playoff spot, I believe, at this point. I don't know if anyone's taking them seriously to actually get over the hump, considering, you know, you've got Washington in ninth and you've got Toronto that's playing better this year, but another, you know, one of those wild swing teams.
Yeah, and I think a team like the Islanders, what have they got to lose? You know, nobody's really given them much of a chance. They came into Ottawa a little while ago, and people taking them lightly. Maybe the Senators took them lightly, but they come away with a 2-1 win in that game. And like you say, they're hanging in there, and they're beating some decent teams as well. So I think that's a group that's got to be pretty loose. They got some great young players, and they're just letting it hang out, just much like Edmonton that came in here. Edmonton's, you know, not in a competitive situation. They don't have a playoff shot. But they're just, they've got a bunch of young guys that just don't really care. And they could be a very dangerous team at this time of year.
We're definitely into that period of time, right, where a lot of these teams that started really poorly get that bump like the Senators did last year.
Yes, no, exactly. And you know, I think the Senators, they had no pressure on them at the start of the year, no expectations. But I think because they've been in this playoff spot for so long and have played pretty well, they're no longer really a surprise in the Eastern Conference. So, you know, I think what we saw in that homestand was the first little bit of expectation and pressure that they were supposed to perform, that they should have won that homestand after coming off a tough Western trip. Since Anaheim, that started a long losing streak, and then they didn't win until they beat Nashville. So I think there's a sense of relief that they've turned it around a little bit with these two wins, but they're going to have to keep it up and at least be probably around a 500 team the rest of the way to hang in here.
Well, as of this sort of recording time, the Senators are 7 points clear of Washington, who are in ninth, and then there's a bit of a gray area there because Washington and Florida can flip depending on who's leading the conference. But why don't we just go through a couple of the teams that are chasing Ottawa? I mean, you've got Winnipeg that's 4 points back of a playoff spot now. The Jets for me have always been one of those teams where that they would probably hang around that level, but you don't see them jumping over based on, you know, some of the, you know, it's almost switched for them all year from offensive troubles to defensive, and it doesn't seem to come together for long periods of time. But do you think they're a legitimate threat to get into the conversation here?
I wouldn't think so, but they're going to have some wins, some really unexpected wins. Just for the past month or so, they haven't been able to get it done, and they're losing close games. They've been unable to score, and they, you know, the coach just seems to be increasingly frustrated. And I think they're a team that, you know, if you're looking at it objectively, it's pretty easy to write them off at this point.
To be fair, Claude Noel seems to be permanently angry.
But, yeah, he does, doesn't he?
And then you look at Washington in ninth right now. I mean, I think this is a team that all season we've all been waiting for them to break out at some point. Is that ever going to come?
No, I know. It's funny because I had a conversation with Brian Murray a little while ago, and we were talking about that situation and the teams behind, and where did he expect, you know, the competition would come from. If he had to pick one team that was going to be the team that Ottawa would probably have to beat out, you know, to get seventh or to get that maybe that last playoff spot. And he said Washington. You know, he said, I really think that's the team that's going to come on here. But they, with Backstrom being hurt, and they just haven't been able to seem to mesh all year long. And everybody's kind of expecting that eventually they're going to get it together. But with the injuries that they've had, and Ovechkin, I guess, maybe not being the player that he was, or maybe he's trying to do too much, or, you know, adapt to a different system, you know, a system of play that's a little more defensive. They're probably the most frustrating team, I would think, in the East, if you're looking at a team that you expected to do more and hasn't. So, you know, they still have a little bit of time to get their act together. And as you say, we'll probably flip with Florida, depending on who wins that division. And then they could vault into a top three spot, whether they deserve it or not. But Washington has been frustrating. And, you know, if they were to do something down the stretch, I think that people would say it's about time.
And, boy, if Florida stays in that number three seed, have you seen in a while a number three seed that was that ripe for a first-round pickoff?
No, it kind of takes you back to the, we used to call it the Southeast Division, you know, when you'd have Atlanta or some other team that would win but not really be deserving of that. It makes you think again about the way they seed teams, and I'd still rather see a system where they just rank them 1 through 8, whether you win the division or not. You know, I think it was you're trying to prop up the divisions to have some meaning. You know, we always have this debate as a newspaper: do we run the division standings or do we run the conference standings? Most people want to see the conference standings, because that's what matters, is where you rank. You know, top 8, who's in, who's out. I think this division thing is, nobody really thinks about the division much anymore, other than you see those teams a little bit more. I'd rather see it just on merit, on points.
And of course, in eighth place right now, you know, the natural rival of the Senators, the Toronto Maple Leafs. We saw a lot of that sort of hatred rear its head during All-Star Week, and then the most recent game at Scotiabank Place, where, you know, I wasn't at that game, but from what I heard, it was about 70% Leaf fans in the stands. So it's nice to see that's ratcheted up a bit, and to see some real meaning, because it could be between those two teams when we come down to a playoff spot.
Yeah, well, right now it looks like they're, I mean, they could both get in, but there's still a lot of games to be played, and it may come down to those two teams, and it's going to be interesting to see which one's more of a mover and a shaker at the deadline. You know, Brian Murray's kicked some tires, but he really doesn't want to give up too much, and Brian Burke is kind of making the same kind of noises that, yeah, it'd be nice to get in, but, you know, there's a story in the papers today or out of practice yesterday with him saying to get in the playoffs and just get wiped out in the first round is no big deal. We really want to think about being a good, consistent team, you know, for the longer term. So, you know, I don't know that he's willing to give up too much to get an addition that's going to help them this year. And he's making it sound like, I'm going to wait until the 27th, until, you know, prices come down, because right now it's very expensive. And Brian Murray said much the same thing.
And then you hear that they're one of the few teams that Rick Nash has put on his list where he'd be willing to go.
Right, but, you know, do they have, you know, the kind of package to give up that would be most attractive to Columbus? You tend to think not. I don't really see that as a team that's really rich in prospects. You know, and Nash would be an interesting addition to any team, but I really think he's a better addition on a team that's a little farther up the curve in terms of being a contender, where he can be a really nice complementary piece. You know, you think about a team like Los Angeles, maybe, or Boston or New York, teams like that where they're already right there, and he makes a nice complementary piece. And does, he goes to Toronto, he's going to face maybe some of the same pressures he has in Columbus of trying to be the guy, and instead of being a complementary piece, where you watched him play for Canada at the Olympics and was so outstanding when he's surrounded by great talent.
When we sort of look at trade deadline additions with contending teams, and that's a lot of the teams you're hearing with Nash, New York, LA to a lesser extent, but I think a lot of people have a feeling about them that they're, they just need to get it together here. And you mentioned Boston and the Vancouvers. I mean, how do you feel about these deals where you're giving up a lot of future pieces and, these are elite teams that are already at the top of the league, and I understand the drive to want to go take that next step, but is there something to be said, too, for staying with the guys that got you there? You just get the impression with the Rangers, for example, they have a really good room, they really play for each other, and then you kind of drop a roster bomb in the middle of it and maybe have to send out some guys who are really popular.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great risk. And I think if you're Columbus and you look at the other side, how many teams can take a guy like Alfred's? Did he throw a stick or did he just lose a stick there?
I think he lost it there.
I don't think he's going to throw a tantrum in front of all these kids watching the practice today. But you look at Columbus, I really think there'd be a lot more teams that could be in play for Rick Nash in the summertime, mm-hmm. when they can adjust their cap and decide which way they want to go and make some moves. Whereas, there's a lot of teams that are kind of mortgaged to the hilt here, and they can't take on that contract. And so there's not nearly as many players, teams as players involved in the Nash sweepstakes as there might be. So, Columbus might just pull away and say, we don't need to get this deal done right now. And if we don't get what we think we should be getting, then we'll wait till the summer.
Yeah, it's interesting when you look at both sides of the coin. I mean, I mentioned on Twitter this morning, I was thinking back to one of the pregame shows recently where Todd White was talking about the season that the Senators went out and added Peter Bondra. And, he acknowledged Bondra is a great player who has that, natural offense. But it also kind of shook things up a bit in the room, where guys have been set in their roles all year, and all of a sudden, that ice time has to come from somewhere, so someone who's maybe been working hard for you all year has to sit.
Yeah, no, and I think you make a good example when you talk about the Rangers, because that's a team where the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. I think they seem to have a formula that's working. It doesn't hurt to have Henrik Lundqvist back there in goal too. But they're a hard-working team. Guys like Callahan, that just, they just seem to give you more than you expect you're going to get from them. And they manage to eke out low-scoring wins. And that's the kind of team I think you want in the playoffs. So, you drop in a Rick Nash in there. How does that change the chemistry? What are the expectations? Do guys start to do less thinking, Rick Nash will do it? I really think it's kind of a lean market this year, and because Rick Nash is far and away the best player that's on the market, I think it's he's become overhyped a little bit. He's not a guy that's been a 100-point player in his career. I mean, he's saddled with being with a bad franchise, but I think teams have to be very careful that he's the right fit for the situation without, as you say, disturbing the chemistry in the room.
And, I mean, one of the names mentioned going back from the Rangers is Brandon Dubinsky, who was their best player in the playoffs last year, arguably. So, always a risk there. Let's turn our attention here to the Senators going into the deadline. Brian Murray said again last night he's not willing to part with a lot of with any of the blue-chip prospects that other teams would be looking for to make a deal. What do you think they should do here? I'm of the opinion that you look at this season, because nobody's really looking at them as a legitimate Stanley Cup contender this year. So enjoy the ride. See if you can, make something happen in the playoffs, because that's always a possibility, even if you aren't considered one of the favorites. But, try and build a sustainable winner for the future here, too.
Oh, I think that's it. I mean, that's exactly what Ryan Murray is thinking. I know when he's when he has been kicking tires, it's more maybe just an extra defenseman. I think what he doesn't want to do is to go into a playoff with this group and then have them fall short because of injury or some other issue on the blue line. So if he could pick up a veteran defenseman that could play some minutes, and so that you've got an extra guy around, and maybe you don't have to play Karkner depending on the situation, or Brian Lee, somebody that could step in there and play a role and be a support guy without disturbing the room and without giving up very much, because you're not going to, he doesn't, like you say, he doesn't want to give up a blue chip prospect. But if he, just for a draft pick, he's got a lot of draft picks that are in the system right now, and you can only have so many that can make the team and remain in the organization. So I think if he gives up a second or a third rounder, I don't think he would mind that. And he's at the same time delivering a message to the guys here and the veteran guys that have worked so hard to be a part of this rebuilding program, that we want you going into the playoffs equipped, and we're not forgetting about you, and maybe this will help just a little bit.
I thought it a little odd that Murray had mentioned maybe going out and trying to get a forward, where you look at the team's performance, they've been in the 6-7-8 range in terms of goals per game in the league. It would seem that more of the need would be on the back end, where they've been really shaky this year.
Well, I know when I talked to him a little while ago, it was a defenseman that he was pursuing, but I mean, I think earlier on when there, there were stretches where this team wasn't scoring very much, and the expectation going into the season was that it wasn't going to score very much. But I think what's happened with the acquisition of Kyle Turris, it's really changed the complexion here. With Peter Regan going down, and there's a guy that looked like he might come into his own and blossom this year. But I think with Kyle Turris, you have a legitimate number two center and a guy with a lot of upside, and you know he's only going to get better. He's played pretty well with Daniel Alfredson, so I think that's it's really kind of given them a pretty good situation up front, especially with their top two lines. And they've got enough of the complementary players, the Zach Smiths and the Doggevins and role players like that, Chris Neal, that can flesh it out. So I really think, even though it wasn't close to the deadline, when they got Kyle Turris from Phoenix, I think it addressed a lot of their needs up front.
And I mean, they've been helped too to be able to see what they have here, because you talk about injuries and stuff. It's almost been, after all the terrible things that happened with them last year, it seems like everything's going right for them this year. They have all their all-stars. They have a great break. They've had, not a lot of, aside from Regan, real serious injury problems to deal with. And for a lot of teams, I think that's the key to putting together a surprising season, is your best players can play.
Oh, it really is. I mean, just go back to last year, where you had Daniel Alfredson, that was, when he wasn't actually out of the lineup, which he was for a lot of games, he was playing basically on one leg. His back was so bad, and he didn't have, good feeling down the one leg. So there's your leader, and now look at him. I mean, he's back. He's not only back, and the 20-goal season is already in the books, and there's lots of games to play. He's a new man. Mm-hmm. It's like he's 5 years younger, the way that he's playing. And as you say, not a lot of injuries. Peter Regan and then, Jesse Winchester. He's kind of a heart and soul guy, but the way things are with the kids that have come up, he's basically now a fourth mm-hmm. liner. So they haven't had, and they'll be touching wood as they listen to this, I guess, but, like Spetz has been healthy and Carlson has been healthy. Their goalie Craig Anderson is not only been healthy, but has been able to shoulder a huge workload. So that's been really important. And a lot of those teams that have been unable to be consistent, it's because they haven't been able to put their lineup out there night after night. And Ottawa has had that luxury, and they'll have to hope that continues down the stretch and into the playoffs.
Yeah, I think you look at some situations of just how well things are going for this team this year, and with the veterans too. I mean, the way Alfredson scores his 400th, and Chris Phillips getting two goals, if you can believe it, in game 1000, it just seems like this is the kind of year that teams dream about in terms of health and positivity, because, boy, were they ever at the other end of that spectrum last year.
Yeah, and now you're into bonus territory. A team that wasn't expected to be in contention for a playoff spot now looks like it's in, very good shape for a playoff spot. And whatever it does, it might surprise a team in the first round, because there's not going to be any expectations on them. Where are they going to end up? Probably, maybe in the seventh slot, maybe eight. facing a two or a three seed if they were to go as high as six. So, the pressure is all going to be on that favorite team, and so they're going to go in there with feeling probably pretty loose and thinking that their future is ahead of them. And that's the kind of team that can be sort of dangerous in the playoffs.
And boy, it's been a bit of a reminder too about the kind of player Jason Spezza is this year, when he has some health and he has some offensive support.
Yeah, and he's really putting up the numbers. I think he's shooting a lot more, and good for him. I think he's taken a lot of abuse here, from certain quarters of the fan spectrum for a long time. Every time there'd be a turnover from one of his backhand passes, that there'd be some groans in the crowd. And I think he's past that. I think he got a lot of love at the All-Star break, and not as much as Daniel Alfredson, obviously, but I think people are coming around to him. And now, when you're suddenly seeing his name on the leaderboard, up among the top scorers, it's kind of like it's finally coming to fruition that he's earned it. He's changed his game. He worked on his skating. He's always worked on his offense, but I think he's worked on his skating game, and he's a little, we won't call him a defensive specialist or anything, but he's not going to be in the Selke trophy race. But he's a little more conscientious about playing his own end, a little more of an all-round player. And I think there's a sense of peace between the fans and Jason Spezza. And who knows, he could be, down the road, get the kind of treatment that the Daniel Alfredson is receiving in his twilight years.
Mm-hmm. I put out a question on Twitter that seemed to get a bit of a mixed reaction, and that is, if the Senators wind up sixth or something in that sort of mid-range of playoff teams, and Spezza is, a top one or two scorer in the league, he's in the top three right now, does he get some consideration for a Hart Trophy? My personal thoughts are, You talk about him, he probably doesn't get there given the kinds of seasons that Malkin and Lundqvist and a couple other guys are having, but is he starting to reach that level where you say this guy is really an incredibly important part of this team?
I think he's going to have to stay really hot, and you also have to look at games played. Some of those guys that are behind him, I mean, just overnight we ran this is the trouble with the newspaper business, the standings can get outdated in a hurry, including the scoring stats. There's I think two guys passed him last night, Stamkos and Giroux both passed him in points before, as soon as we got the paper out, basically. Those guys, put the points in the bank. So there are some games to be made up, and he's going to have to continue to be hot. But I will say, if he's in the top three scorers by the end of the year, then I think he's going to have to be in that, that long list of Hart Trophy candidates. Now, if he could elevate himself to where he actually won an Art Ross, there's no question that he vaults himself into prime consideration for the Hart. So maybe this is the year that he gets into the discussion. And if he can have subsequent years where he actually wins an Art Ross, then I think, he's going to get some serious consideration.
It's sort of the same deal as when we were talking about this with Carlson and the Norris earlier this year. He's playing well enough for people to start, putting him in their thoughts a little bit, probably not good enough to get there, but the Senators are starting to have these players again who are getting into those conversations.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and I think what happened there's a bit of a lag, because I think here in Ottawa we came to appreciate Carlson a little bit earlier than everybody else, because we got to watch him every night, we saw the points that were, he was putting up, and I think the rest of the league kind of caught up with that conversation around the All-Star break, and he got a lot of attention there, and just before the All-Star break we're people on NHL.com and other analysts were starting to talk about him as being, a legitimate Norris candidate. Would he be a real contender there at the end this year? I don't know, because you do have to look at the whole package. I'd almost like to see I've heard talk of it. You split up that Norris and give like a Bobby Orr trophy for the offensive guy, where a guy like Carlson would be automatically a contender. And then you keep the Norris trophy for more the defensive player, guy that's maybe a shutdown guy or more of an all-round type player, but split it up.
It would certainly make sense when you look at there's a Selke, right?
Well, that's right. Yeah, that's right. And I think, it's just, it's hard for guys like Carlson that are such one-way defensive players and, not as great in their own end. It's hard for them to get serious consideration. If you're it's easier to give it a guy like Nick Lidstrom, whose offense is good enough,
and his defense and all-around game is just absolutely stellar. And so, you know, those guys are going to win out every time. And so the offensive guys like a Carlson, and there've been others in you know in hockey history that have scored a lot of points and didn't get Norris consideration. There's something there for them.
All right, I'm going to let you go on, by putting you on the spot here. First question: do the Senators make the playoffs, and at whose expense? And second question: who do you like for the Stanley Cup most this year?
Boy, the Stanley Cup one is probably the hardest question. I really don't see Boston repeating. I think a team like Detroit, if they've got cap room, you know, and if they make a nice addition at the deadline, I think, you know, and maybe this is the year for the West again. Maybe it's their turn. But the Senators do make the playoffs, and I think it's between Florida and Washington, which team gets left out. But one of those teams will be left out. I think the Leafs might just have enough to hang in there and maybe make a little addition at the deadline, but I'm really going to be intrigued to see who Ottawa matches up with first round. I'd love it to be I'd love it to be a New York or a Boston, because we haven't had those matchups before, and they're great cities to visit, great hockey cities, original six towns, so wouldn't it be great if they match up against the Rangers or the Boston Bruins in the first round?
Boy, Detroit has to learn how to win on the road first, though.
Yeah, they just need home ice advantage in every series, and they're laughing.
Well, I'm liking the Senators to hang on here, too, and I still like Boston. But all right, thanks a lot, Wayne.
Okay.